The Biden administration will not send any diplomatic or official representation to the Beijing 2022 Winter Olympics and Paralympic Games, given the PRC's ongoing genocide and crimes against humanity in Xinjiang and other human rights abuses. The athletes on Team USA have our full support. We will be behind them 100% as we cheer them on from home, but we will not be contributing to the fanfare of the Games.
That's White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki back in December, explaining that the United States, along with the United Kingdom and Canada, are staging a diplomatic boycott of the Beijing Olympics. Chief among the concerns raised by these nations is the Chinese government's oppressive treatment of the Uyghur Muslim community, which officials from the U.S. have labeled genocide. For more on this, we're joined now by Yasmin Sirhan, staff writer at The Atlantic. Yasmin, it's great to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
So remind us who the Uyghurs are and what's been happening to them in China.
So the Uyghurs are a Turkic, mostly Muslim ethnic minority that are native to China's northwestern Xinjiang province. Their population totals, I think, about 11 million people in Xinjiang, of which it's estimated that approximately 1 million are currently being detained in what can only really be described as concentration camps, which is where they're subject to political indoctrination, forced sterilization, and even torture. And, you know, human rights groups say that Uyghurs' crimes that land them in these camps often amount to things like praying, wearing a headscarf, or even having a relative overseas. Now, this is, as far as I think any of us are aware, the largest scale detention of any sort of ethnic or religious minority group, really since World War II. And it's for this reason that the United States, along with several other governments around the world, have labeled the repression of the Uyghurs a genocide. Now, it's worth noting, of course, that the Chinese government disputes these allegations, though they don't actually dispute the existence of these camps. They just prefer to call them re-education camps, which are aimed at, as they say, eradicating religious extremism and violent terrorism in Xinjiang.
Okay, so I know that the U.S. is obviously among the nations who are conducting a diplomatic boycott of these Beijing Olympics, but when you make this point about concentration camps as the actual backdrop of the Olympics, are we missing an opportunity here by to truly draw world attention to this by still allowing the athletes to participate?
That topic is definitely subject to a lot of, I think, debate. You know, this question of, do we punish Olympic athletes who sometimes only have a really once in a lifetime or once in a career opportunity to perform at an Olympic Games? The U.S. has fully boycotted Olympics in the past, and I think that the verdict certainly among sort of Olympic experts and commentators that I've spoken to is that they don't feel that it's right for athletes to miss out. But, you know, by that same token, then, you know, activists and critics of these games in particular argue that, you know, we're really just sort of normalizing China's human rights abuses, that a diplomatic boycott, while symbolic, you know, it obviously certainly registers how governments like the U.S. and others are feeling about China's human rights abuses, that it doesn't really do anything meaningfully to, you know, hold China accountable.
So, Yasmin, we've been talking a little bit about the U.S. and about nations that are on a diplomatic boycott. What nations are not making even a diplomatic point of this issue?
Well, the vast majority of them, I think, is the simple way to put it. It'd be easier to name the countries that are engaged in a diplomatic boycott versus the ones that aren't. But I think what really has stood out to me in the process of my reporting on this is just how silent, you know, majority Muslim countries have been. You know, if standing up for the Uyghurs was an Olympic sport, Muslim majority countries wouldn't even make the podium. I mean, despite the fact that these countries, you know, who I should mention, the Muslim world is a very diverse place spanning various countries, cultures, languages, you know, these countries have found on numerous occasions to speak out with one voice, whether it's to speak about the Rohingya crisis in Myanmar or Israel's occupation of the Palestinians or, you know, any other litany of issues that have affected the Muslim world in some way. But for some reason, which I get into in my reporting, Muslim majority countries just don't have it in them to say anything about what's happening to the Uyghurs. And in fact, have even in some cases defended China's treatment.
And what is that reason, that for some reason?
the biggest reason for this is Beijing's growing influence. You know, China is not only one of the most important trading partners in the Muslim world, but crucially, it's also a big investor. So through its Belt and Road Initiative, which is its global infrastructure project, China has invested billions of dollars across plenty of majority Muslim countries. And in doing so, the Chinese government has not only, I think, secured its influence, but I think it's also purchased a lot of leverage. So as a result, these governments, even if perhaps maybe their populations feel that their governments should do more, they don't really see much of a benefit in terms of calling their Chinese partners out, certainly not in public. People like Pakistan's Prime Minister Imran Khan say that, you know, they have conversations with their partners and allies in China in the background, but you would never hear him say anything even lightly critical about China's treatment of the Uyghurs.
Tell me about the Belt and Road Initiative.
So the Belt and Road Initiative is this massive infrastructure project that China kicked off in 2013, in which it's effectively invested hundreds of billions of dollars around the world into things such as ports, railways, energy projects. These can be seen all across Asia, Africa, and Europe. And the goal of this seemingly is not only to expand infrastructure in many of these countries, particularly in these developing countries that don't necessarily have a lot of these resources, but I also think crucially to kind of, you know, establish influence and establish leverage. And I think that Muslim majority countries' behavior vis-a-vis the Uyghurs is evidence that that's working. You know, they don't really see any sort of economic or political incentive to speak out.
We very recently did a deep dive, really thinking about the 20 years of Guantanamo Bay. And one of the things that most struck me was one of our guests said, it is a prison for Muslim men. And given that the U.S. has that own sort of stain on our own record around this, I wonder about how it plays on an international stage for the U.S. to be representing this diplomatic concern relative to the Uyghurs while, by the way, continuing to operate the detention center at Guantanamo.
That's a really important and good question. Look, you know, I think hypocrisy and that selective concern for these people is a really important issue because, you know, this is something that I brought up in my piece, but a lot of the majority Muslim countries, particularly the repressive ones, like they have their own human rights abuses that they've been dealing with, right? So they may not even see much of a point in calling out China's human rights abuses, lest they be accused of the pot calling the kettle black. You know, I think that this potentially could be a similar scenario here where, you know, I think China, kind of similar to Russia, I think their officials love to use Twitter to their advantage. And I'm sure there's probably a litany of tweets of kind of whataboutism and kind of asking, you know, well, you've done X, Y, and Z. And that isn't to discount, of course, the U.S.'s own abuses on this front, particularly with Guantanamo. I think it's just a real shame for the Muslims in this world, particularly the Uyghurs who, you know, are counting. And I'm not just talking about the Uyghurs who are in Xinjiang. I'm talking about Uyghurs in the diaspora, many of whom I've spoken to for previous reporting. You know, they're really counting on the international community, who they know have known full well for years what's happening in Xinjiang. They've told their stories. They've told the stories of their relatives. And yet, even today, we can own the best that we can hope for around an Olympic Games is a diplomatic boycott, which I think, as we've already established, can really only do so much.
Yasmin Sirhan is staff writer at The Atlantic. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Melissa. It's always a pleasure.